The first thing that probably most newcomers to this temple say is to express their happy surprise at seeing such a beautiful facility for the worship of Krishna in a small town, in a small country, in a small world. So it's very pleasing to see this. The temple is beautifully decorated. You're wondering about that, huh? The beautiful decoration of the temple is the beautiful devotees with the reception was opulent for my poor self. That is Vaishnava etiquette, which is as a result of Kali Yuga, everything good is decreasing, everything bad is increasing. So we don't see that very much, especially in the Protestant countries. I mean, even where there are Vaishnavas, our previous conditioning affects us. So the Protestant countries tend to be more skeptical and less inclined to give respect to saintly persons. That's the Protestantism came as a well, there are many factors, but one was against the misuse of the position of a religious leader. So we find in the Protestant countries that it's not so common to welcome devotees according to the culture, which is Vaishnava. Even among Vaishnavas, often the Vaishnavas in Protestant countries, I guess due to the conditioning, they feel less inclined toward that more complicated way of thinking and less simple, straightforward and accepting. So thank you for welcoming like me like this, overcoming your cultural background. I also noticed that because I just pointed out this morning in Mangalati that one devotee was putting his finger in the water to sprinkle it. And I noticed here that you were not deliberately not putting your hand in the finger in the water to test the temperature. Who taught you that? It's unusual. It's a detail of Vaishnava and Vedic culture which is not very well known. So that's nice. Thank you for all these things. Now, one detail of Vaishnava culture, which is often transgressed, and it's actually a very important, it's more than a detail, it's actually a very important principle, which I pointed out twice today during two home visits, is that and our altars, I was pointing out in one case on the home altar, there was a picture of one of my god brothers, who was the guru of the devotees in that home, on the altar, which was bigger than that of the previous acharyas, including Srila Prabhupada, and higher placed. And in another case, the picture was my own. So I pointed out that this is is not only not proper, but is not, but it becomes an obstacle in our advancement in Krishna consciousness also. Because the flow of the parampara comes down, and it, as you were saying, it comes down by Vaishnava Kripa, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas. But that means that each Vaishnava considers himself to be subordinate to the previous Vaishnava. And that's how the mercy flows. So, you may consider here also that I doubt very much if Srila Prabhupada wants to be sitting above his guru. So you may consider making some adjustment there. Even though Srila Prabhupada and Saraswati Thakur, these are all Vaishnava acharyas of the very highest order, but still there is that proper etiquette to follow. So, this evening I thought to speak on Hrishikesha. I spoke on this name of Vishnu two nights ago. The name means the controller of the senses. Something more to be said. Of course, there's always more to be said. This name comes in one of the essential verses defining the process of bhakti. Sarvopadhi vinir muktam tatparadvena nirmanam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchyate. This verse from the Narada Pancharatra states that, it's actually a definition of bhakti, stating that when one is free from all mundane designations, one's consciousness is absorbed in this Supreme, and one is free from mundane contamination, and the senses are engaged in the service of the master of the senses, that is called bhakti. There are other definitions of bhakti from slightly different perspectives, and even in different sampradayas, they'll emphasize differently. Generally, in the Vaishnava sampradayas, they emphasize bhakti as the process by which one attains mukti for serving the Lord in Vaikuntha. But the Gaudiya Acharyas, they have not described bhakti as a process for achieving mukti or liberation from material existence. But the emphasis is on selfless service. And there's another verse, a very famous verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes bhakti. And these two verses, the one which I just said and the one which I'm about to say, they are quoted by Srila Rupa Goswami in the beginning of his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to introduce the topic of bhakti, which he elaborates on in this most important book. So, that verse is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. These are both verses that Srila Prabhupada and all the Vaishnava Acharyas repeatedly quote because of their importance. So this verse, Savai Pung Sang Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Adhokshaje Ahaitukya Pratihataya Yatma Suprasidati. The highest dharma for every living being is bhakti, or or that by which bhakti is performed to Adhokshaja. Adhokshaja is another name of Krishna. That devotion, or that service, devotional service to Krishna, should be without any motive other than to serve Krishna. No material motive, no motive for liberation, only the motivation to serve and please Krishna. And it should be of such a nature that there is no cessation, it's not part-time, and that indeed nothing can stop it. Under no condition will a devotee cease to serve Krishna. And only such devotion can completely satisfy the self. So these are two essential definitions. One is of bhakti, and the other is of the highest dharma, or the highest occupation. Or the, dharma, of course, is a word which is it's almost indefinable, because there are so many aspects to it, and it's used in, I mean, even to translate from Sanskrit to English, it's indefinable. But even within the Vedic tradition, there are different acharyas who have attempted to give definitions, because it covers so many aspects: law, occupational duty. There are external aspects and internal aspects. The swadharma in the material sense means one's role in society as a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, or woman. But the internal dharma, that is, or the supreme dharma, that is defined here in this verse of Bhagavatam, the supreme position, or existential position, or occupation, or activity, or identity, is that of performing bhakti to Adhokshaja. So in these two verses, one name is, these are technical names, you could say, one name is given Hrishikesha, the master of the senses. And in the other one, Adhokshaja. These names are both very important in understanding who we are, who is Krishna, and what is our relationship with him. They're names of Krishna, but by understanding these names, we can also understand what is our relationship with Krishna. So they're very important for us to understand. Hrishikesh means the master of the senses. And the verse quoted states that we are to engage the senses in his service. So that I spoke on somewhat elaborately two nights ago. Now, the name Adhokshaja. Of course, any of these names may have many meanings. But the basic meaning of this name is that Krishna cannot be understood by the mundane senses. He is not perceivable by the mundane senses. Which brings us to another definition, that Krishna cannot be is not possible to approach Krishna by the mundane senses. that verse is there. What is that? Sevan Mukhi? Hmm? No, Sevan Mukhi Hijivada. What's the first line of that? Atashri Krishna, Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grahyam Indriyai Sevan Mukhi Hijivada Swayameva Spurati Adaha. Krishna is not perceivable by the mundane senses, but he manifests himself. By one's own effort, one cannot see Krishna, touch Krishna, smell Krishna, taste Krishna, feel Krishna, or even think of Krishna. All the senses, the mundane senses, are incompetent to perceive Krishna. But Krishna reveals himself to a devotee whose senses are purified by the attitude of wanting to serve him. So that question came up at the end of the class in St. Gallen, that we see the deity but we don't feel the ecstasy. When we see the beautiful woman, we feel ecstasy. But when we see Krishna, we don't feel ecstasy. That's because our senses are on the mundane platform. Of course, that ecstasy, we have to, the ecstasy of seeing the beautiful woman, we should be very careful of that, because that will simply, that ecstasy is the poison that will keep us always away from the actual ecstasy of seeing Krishna, touching Krishna, smelling Krishna, tasting Krishna, feeling Krishna, perceiving Krishna. Krishna is perceivable through the senses, but not through mundane senses. So this name, Adhokshaja, is a very important name. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, whenever you see this name, you should state it in a book, you should underline it. It's this essential point. As long as we're on the mundane platform, which means making plans for sense gratification, or thinking that I am eligible to enjoy, this very way of thinking blocks us from bhakti. The attitude that I should enjoy through my senses, which to the materialistic person, it's such a, it's so axiomatic that no one questions it. Can you translate that? You have the word axiom in German? No? Well, I can't. Do you have it in Tamil? It means, axiom means a self-evident principle. I don't have to say to you that the sun has not yet set today. It's not necessary to say. It's not necessary to explain sugar is sweet. It's a self-evident, accepted principle. So, among pretty much everyone in the world, it's just accepted, doesn't matter whether you're a theist, atheist, communist, capitalist, Swiss, Sri Lankan, or even a dog or a cat, it's just accepted that we are meant to enjoy this world. And enjoyment means through the senses. No one questions. Those who question it, they start to make spiritual advancement. But practically, we don't, in the Western world, it's hardly there. The whole concept of religion even is that God will make this world nice for us, And then we will go to heaven, and we don't know what we're going to do there, but it should be nice. And the main pleasure is looking down at all those people who didn't believe in Jesus and watching them all burn in hell forever. So, the idea that we should serve God for His pleasure and that we are not meant for our own pleasure, that is only in Vaishnava philosophy. Even in the Indian cultural tradition, in which people, they do see that this trying to enjoy the senses leads to misery, as Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita, another very important verse which we should all recite at every moment, because at every moment we're thinking how to enjoy our senses. So, yehi sangsparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyanta vanta kontayana teshu ramate buddhaha. So that we can act on the platform of intelligence instead of acting on the platform of an animal, we should understand that sensual pleasure, it's always mixed with distress. And it simply leads to distress. Beginning, middle, and end. Therefore, an intelligent person does not partake in this. In the materialistic society, one is considered most intelligent if he's expert at making arrangements for sense enjoyment. But that's not actually intelligent. That's why in the materialistic culture, the person who lives in the biggest house and has lots of money and servants and is considered the most prestigious and advanced. But in an actually advanced spiritual culture, such a person is considered a big fool. And the most advanced person is the person who can live without arrangements for sense gratification. A person is considered advanced if he can live with just the bare minimum, because he's not a slave of his senses. The person who thinks, Ishvaroham aham bhogi siddhoham balavan sukhi, I'm in charge here. Everything's under control. I know what I'm doing. Don't question me. I'm perfect. I'm powerful. I'm happy. I'm the enjoyer. Such a person thinks like that, but is a slave of their senses. So in Vedic culture, the person is considered the most respectable who is detached from all these things. So generally such persons, they aspire for liberation from this material world by not engaging the senses in sense gratification. But there is another stage, and a higher stage, and the best stage, which is to engage the senses in the service of Krishna. But we can't do that in our present state of consciousness, because our present state of consciousness is one of thinking that to enjoy the senses is just, that is existence. No one questions. Even some people, some philosophers in the Western world, they have seen the farce of materialistic life, but they have no solution for it. They see that, what is this? They're simply living, and they come to the conclusion the world is all miserable, so they have some insight like that. But they cannot go beyond, they don't know anything better than that. And therefore they become skeptics, or they consider that, well, there's no real point to living, so might as well just die. Which is actually, then they become much influenced by tamogun, for all their philosophy, they just become hopeless. Because they do not have adhokshajagyana, knowledge of a state of sensual activity beyond that, beyond the pettiness of this mundane material existence. Petty. This whole big civilization, big buildings, big roads, big factories, it's all just built on the principle of sense gratification. And even the most respectable people with their big cars and big money, their basic sense gratification is the same as that of a pig or a dog. So this is not civilization. But that impetus for sensual enjoyment, that has to be purified, otherwise we cannot even begin to perceive Krishna. There's no Krishna consciousness, and there's no bhakti unless we act with purified senses. There may be some kind of Krishna consciousness, like Kamsa. He was also Krishna conscious. Ravana, he was also Rama conscious. But that is not bhakti. That is not the supreme occupation. It's not param dharma. That will not give satisfaction to the self. So the question comes, well, what do we do? How do we, you know, we're in this state of wanting to enjoy our senses, where we're accustomed to that, then how can we perform bhakti? How can we do it if we're thinking of enjoying our senses? Well, there is an answer, that Krishna is not available or not perceivable or accessible to the mundane senses, or one who is in the consciousness of enjoying the mundane senses, but he does make himself accessible by his mercy. He comes to this world, he teaches us Bhagavad Gita, he gives the process of devotional service, and we can begin to link with Krishna by the process of bhakti yoga, by the mercy of Krishna, which is manifested by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, who teach us the process of devotional service, and by their words, by their speaking, and by their personal activities, they teach us how to act in Krishna consciousness. So, nitya siddha Krishna prema shadha kabunoi shravanadi shuddha chite kari yada. The Krishna consciousness is the natural position of every living being. It is not an artificial imposition on the mind. It is natural. But it doesn't seem to us to be natural. It seems to us to be natural to that we should ourselves enjoy our senses. That is due to perverted consciousness, perverse consciousness, which it's a bad habit. How long have we had this bad habit? Since time immemorial. Anadi karamaphale. Tori bhavarna vajale, tori bari na deki upai. We are fallen in this ocean of material existence since time immemorial, and by ourselves we can't get out. We can't find any way out. So the Vaishnavas, they engage us in the process of devotional service. Now we're talking here in a very, or I'm talking, in a very analytical way, but often that takes place in a very spontaneous way, just like we go on the street and chant Hare Krishna, and we ask people to chant with us. And we don't explain to them a whole big philosophy that actually you're an eternal servant of Krishna, you're covered by the material consciousness, and you have to chant Hare Krishna, Chaito Dharpana Marjanam, there are seven effects of chanting the holy name, and we're all falling in the material world. We try and explain all these things, and they can't understand it at all. Just ask them to chant Hare Krishna. And they don't know why they're doing it. And why do they do anything? Why does anyone in the material world do anything? Well, everything everyone does in this material world, for every living being, what they do is... every living being, everything that every living being does is to achieve sense gratification and to avoid material distress. And distress means the opposite of sense gratification. In other words, just like the tongue wants to enjoy some nice food, and if you have something not tasting very nice, it's not very pleasant. So we try to attain that which gives pleasure to the senses and to avoid that which causes distress to the senses. And that's mentally also. So when we go and say to chant Hare Krishna, we ask everyone in the street. I think maybe a little difficult in Switzerland because people are somewhat reserved, is it? They won't easily join in. Although if we go in India or Mexico, it may be easier. But the people who do join in chanting Hare Krishna, they can see it's something religious, but they don't think about it very much, but because they see the devotees are happy, and they want to be happy, and those who have less inhibitions, they don't know why they're doing it, but they also chant Hare Krishna. They don't know why they're doing it, but it just makes them feel good at the moment. So in this way, they're engaged in devotional service. One devotee told me, this is a Jayananda story, the famous Jayananda, who was probably the antithesis of a pundit, in as much as he was a great pundit, in as much as he completely understood Krishna consciousness. But in terms of quoting shlokas and all this, no, that wasn't Jayananda. When Srila Prabhupada gave Gayatri Mantra to Jayananda, Prabhupada was trying to teach him the mantras, and Prabhupada just ended up roaring in laughter at Jayananda's attempt to pronounce the Gayatri Mantras. But he is famous as a great devotee. One devotee said that when he came to the temple in San Francisco for the first time, so he wanted to find out about Krishna, he wanted to ask some questions. And if anyone came like that with any questions, they sent everyone to Jayananda because he was the big pundit. He knew how to answer the questions. Whereas mostly all the devotees are very new. So he came and he said, well, I want to ask some questions. He said, well, go and see Jayananda. He said, well, where can I find him? He said, well, at this time you must be out the back taking out the garbage. So he went out the back and he said, are you Jayananda? Yes. And he said, and he saw this devotee so effulgent and so happy. That also, more than anything, struck me when I first came to a temple, to ISKCON temple, Bhaktivedanta Manor. The thing that struck me the most was how blissful and effulgent the devotees were. I never seen or imagined that human beings could be like that. So the question which this devotee asked was, well, how are you so happy? And Jayananda answered, I don't know, I don't have time to think about that. Here, take this garbage can and help me take it out. And immediately engage him in devotional service. And by that, devotional service, one becomes purified. That's, I don't know about nowadays, but that was the standard when I joined. That you join, the first thing, your service is cleaning the toilets, and then you graduate to scrubbing the pots, and then you graduate to getting on the street and selling books. And that can go on for years, as long as it can go on for your whole life. There are still some devotees who are doing it their whole life. So that was the purification program. Not just sitting down and trying to understand it and trying to work it out and take notes and put everything in your head. This goes here, that goes there, and now I understood, and now I'll write my PhD on bhakti. I understood it all. It doesn't work like that. But side by side with the service, the willingness to serve, which in the menial service means to give up one's egoism and become humble, then Shravanadi. Of course, no one will agree to do that. Just like we have this professor from Lithuania in Salem, in the temple there. So his mother from Lithuania phones up and said, well, how are you doing? Is everything all right? Yes, yes, I'm very happy. And what are you doing? Well, I'm cleaning toilets. My son, he was a professor in the university, now he's cleaning toilets, they brainwashed him. She's so upset, but he's happy. He was never happy as a professor. Now he's happy. Maybe after some time he can do some other services also. The professors, they need it more. For them, cleaning toilets is essential. Others may bypass that stage, but for professors especially, most essential. Most essential. That's bad English. Anyway. Who will agree to do that? Well, there must be at least some initial hearing. And hearing must go on. Hearing. Shravanadi shuddha chitta koreyoda. By hearing, by the process of devotional service, beginning with hearing, then one's pure consciousness becomes revived. So it's necessary for us to hear regularly. That question was raised, how can we be enthusiastic about Bhagavatam class? We see that Srila Prabhupada, he was enthusiastic. And he spoke basically the same basic things over and over again. Even Srila Prabhupada, the last time I personally heard Srila Prabhupada was in October 1977, where he was about to take some strawberries or something. He hadn't eaten for weeks. And then he started reciting Sharira Vidyajal, and then he started explaining it, the meaning of this, that we have to control the senses, and the senses, they take us to death, therefore we have to... And I was struck by this, that here's Srila Prabhupada, he can, apparently, physically, he can hardly talk. He's in Vrindavan, surrounded by all his leading devotees, and he's talking about controlling the senses. And Srila Prabhupada was enthusiastic for this, to repeatedly state this. So, of course, Krishna consciousness, as you were also mentioning, it's a huge culture. There's so many aspects, huge culture. But this basic point we have to hear again and again and again. How we are not the body, we are eternal spirit soul. Krishna is fully spiritual. Krishna cannot be perceived by mundane senses. Nahaṁ prakāśa. Nahaṁ prakāśa sarvasya yoga maya samavrita. Mūdho yang na bijānāti loko māma jamavyayam. Krishna is not, he's not revealed to everyone. He's covered. Although he is unborn, inexhaustible, and in the next verse, Vedaham samatitani vartamani chajun. Vartamana nichajun. Bhavishyani chabhutani. He knows everything, past, present, and future. But he's not accessible to everyone. He should be accessible to everyone. But because we are all of the same nature of Krishna, we all have an intimate relationship with Krishna. But that is covered by what? By our desire to enjoy the senses. And even for those who try to control the senses, but they don't recognize Krishna, they also can't understand Krishna, because they are envious of Krishna. Because even persons who control the senses and become somewhat self-realized, because they don't have the attitude of service to Krishna, then their senses don't really become purified, they just become numb and anesthetized. They become as if, just like when you get an anesthetic, your senses become unconscious. But it doesn't mean that you've become self-realized because you have an anesthetic. Right? The yogis are trying to withdraw their senses so that their senses are not attracted to the object. So if you take an anesthetic, then you can't, you know, someone can, well, that's what they do. They cut your body open with a knife and you don't feel anything. Does that mean you're self-realized? No, it just means you have some temporary measure to, so that the senses are turned off. So the so-called self-realization of the Mayavadis, who by some manipulation of their consciousness or withdrawal of the senses from the sense objects, they have temporarily anesthetized themselves. But they have, it's not that their senses are purified, it's just that they're turned off, that's all. So, yainyairavindaksha vimuktamaninas trayastabhavad avishuddha buddhaya. They think that they are liberated, but their consciousness is not actually fully purified. And therefore, even though aruhya kritrena parang padang tatam, even though with great difficulty they ascend to the parampada, to the supreme position, but they're not fixed in that position. They are patantiyadho anajita yushmadangra, because they fail to properly respect Krishna's lotus feet. They fall down again. It means they never really got up. So purification of the senses is required. And that is possible by regularly engaging the senses in Krishna's service. From the very beginning in Krishna consciousness, we are engaged in the activities of Paramahamsas, hearing and chanting about Krishna, worshipping Krishna. These are the activities of fully liberated souls. What do the fully liberated souls do? They chant Hare Krishna. What do the great devotees do? They worship the deity of Krishna. They chant the names of Krishna. They talk about Krishna. They hear about Krishna. From the very beginning in Krishna consciousness, we are engaged in the activities of Paramahamsas. But there are some restrictions and guidelines also, because the Paramahamsas, they do so automatically. Just like we automatically gravitate towards sense gratification. So the Paramahamsas, they're automatically attracted towards serving Krishna. But we do so under rules and regulations to channel our activities and consciousness into that, with the understanding that by doing it, one's pure consciousness will be revived. Just like a patient suffering from amnesia, he is required to be put into circumstances that are very familiar to him. Then he can start to remember, oh yes, this is my home, this is my wife, these are my children. It's more, if you keep him in a hospital, it's more difficult to cure him from amnesia because the surroundings, he's not familiar. It often happens to me, because I travel a lot, that often I wake up in the morning and I don't know where I am. And I look around and I can't recognize, what is this, where am I? And then I just try to remember where I've been in the last few days and say, oh, I'm in such and such a place. But it takes a little time, because especially if I'm not familiar with the surroundings. So usually when someone wakes up in the morning, if they live in the same place and they sleep in the same place, they don't think when they get up, where am I? It just doesn't occur to them. It's just normal, and most people couldn't imagine thinking, where am I, when they get up, because they get up in the same place every day. So, in the same way, our natural place is in the service of Krishna. So if we engage in that, then our natural propensity to serve Krishna becomes revived. And that is purification. Purification means to perform service to Krishna as naturally as we now don't serve Krishna. But actually, that isn't natural. It's unnatural. To a madman, his madness seems natural. It just seems that's just the way he thinks he should be. But he's mad. And everyone in this material world is insane. Even the Swiss, who appear to be very sane. But actually, Swiss are also insane. Excuse me for saying so, but it's just a fact. Nunang pramatah kurute vikarma yad indriya pritya aprinoti na sadhu manye yata atmanayam asannapi kleshada asadeha. It's nunam, it's just certainly a fact that everyone in this material world is insane. And not just slightly, but mata means insane, pramata means very much so. Why? Because people perform activities that ensure that they will get again and again bodies for suffering in this material world. And that's insane. The sane use of the human life is to see that there's no happiness in this material world. What are we going to do about it? We should get out of it. But just to go on performing activities that entangle one in material life is, according to Rishabhdev, insane. So, however civilized and sane the Swiss people may appear to be, according to Rishabhdev, who wandered naked, they are insane. And we accept the verdict of Rishabhdev, not that of the Swiss. Because Rishabhdev showed the path of liberation from this material world, and the Swiss are showing the path of entanglement in this material world. A successful materialist means misleader. Successful materialist, it's an oxymoronic term, self-contradictory term. There's no success. Material life means entanglement in material existence. So the senses become purified by hearing these things. They hear again and again. We're not meant for entanglement in this world. We're meant to serve Krishna. Krishna is the supreme transcendent reality, the supreme personality of Godhead. He is the center of all existence. He is to be served. How is he to be served? By hearing, chanting, remembering, by serving the Vaishnavas. By doing this, even in the very neophyte stage, even with the beginning understanding that we are meant to serve Krishna, let me try to serve Krishna, because that is done under the guidance of devotees who direct the experienced devotees who direct the beginning devotees in how to become purified, how to engage the senses in Krishna's service by their personal example and by speaking and differentiating and showing. By their speaking, they show what is the path of Krishna consciousness and what is not the path of Krishna consciousness. And then it becomes clear as one serves more and chants more and hears more, or as one serves and chants, and then what is heard becomes more and more understood. It's not exactly an intellectual process. The serving, the hearing has to be there. And by hearing, one gets impetus to serve. By serving, one gets impetus to hear. So all these activities, they nourish each other. So by purified senses, we can serve Krishna. In the beginning, the senses are not at all purified. But gradually, they become purified. Purified means to become free of the consciousness of I am the enjoyer and full of the consciousness that I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the enjoyer. He is the only person entitled to enjoy. So by repeatedly hearing this, then the consciousness becomes purified and we can actually serve Krishna. Otherwise, Krishna, how can we begin to serve him? When he can only be served by those who are fully pure of purified senses. Otherwise, he's not, we can't even begin to understand him. So, he mercifully gives us this process of bhakti, sadhana bhakti. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. From performing sadhana bhakti, then as the senses become purified, we become eligible to enter into the higher levels. But we have to go step by step. There's no pole vault into raga nuga bhakti. You can't just suddenly jump into the Ras Leela and say, here I am. No, you won't get anywhere near. So, therefore, rascals, they invent their own Ras Leela. That's been there in the history of Vaishnavism. They take the pastimes of Krishna as an excuse to themselves become degraded in the most mundane way. Most gross way. So many people, they don't understand. Until our acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and especially Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, came and forcefully preached against these things. People didn't understand. Many persons who considered themselves to be Vaishnavas, they thought that, well, we're Vaishnavas, and Vaishnavas, they have Vaishnavis. That's Vaishnavism. And everything else. And other people who were not Vaishnavas, they didn't want to have anything to do with Vaishnavism because they thought, this is just disgusting. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came and very strongly preached against all these things. How could that contamination enter? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wasn't like that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he heard the singing of Gita Govinda in the temple being very sweetly sung, he ran toward the singer, wanting to embrace the singer. And he was so ecstatic at the hearing of that he was running through all the thorn bushes without feeling the pain of the thorns. And Govinda, his servant, ran behind, because Govinda understood the singer is a woman. And Govinda grabbed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he said, it's a woman singing. And the sound, the name woman, or the word woman, brought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to external consciousness. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was running to embrace that singer. But instead he embraced Govinda and said, Govinda, you have saved my life. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his ecstasy, if he'd gone and embraced a woman, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would not... He banished Chota Haridas for what? For nothing, practically. I mean, if in our movement we had to all commit suicide for what Chota Haridas did, we wouldn't have a movement. We'd just have a whole list of suicides, that's all. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was very liberal in distributing Krishna consciousness, but he was very strict in restricting sense gratification. Daru prakriti hare munerapi man, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that even the wooden form of a woman bewilders even the mind, even of a great muni or a great spiritualist. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very strict about these matters. Then how did that enter in the Vaishnava Sampradaya? So much contamination. Because of not understanding this point, the difference between bhakti on the purified platform and that on the neophyte platform, that and considering or not understanding that we are meant for serving Krishna's senses. Krishna has transcendental senses. Krishna cannot be served with the mundane senses. There's another completely bogus sampradaya who because of not understanding. Yeah, one way of not understanding that point is to think that, well, if Krishna danced with gopis, I can also dance with some gopis. Or another misunderstanding is that Krishna, he likes gopis, so let me, a man, dress in a sari and become a gopi. And there's a whole, that's going on even today. The people do that. And to us it seems absurd, but many people think, oh, this is very spiritual. So, because they don't understand the difference between spirit and matter, the first lesson of Krishna consciousness, which therefore Prabhupada taught to us again and again and again and again, that Krishna can only be served with transcendental senses. So how can these contaminations come? Because of insufficient exposition of the principle of Krishna being Adhokshaja, Hrishikesha. We are meant to serve his senses. Krishna is completely transcendental. We cannot serve him with mundane senses. He can only be served on the fully spiritual platform. So this requires very piercing or very precise distinction between the spiritual and the mundane, because it may be difficult sometimes to understand what is spiritual and what is mundane. Therefore, Siddhanta Balya Chitte Nakaraha Alosh Eha Hoite Krishna Lage Surura Manosh. One should not be lazy in the matter of understanding all these points, in understanding the Siddhanta, because by understanding Siddhanta, or the proper conclusions of Vaishnava teachings, one's mind becomes strongly attached to Krishna. So, if we don't understand Siddhanta, then we see some people who are strongly attached to Krishna, but that's not in the way that the acharyas accept. Just like the people, men who dress in saris, and it may seem they've made such a sacrifice, they've given up their identity to become gopis, but they're trying to satisfy Krishna on the sensual platform, not understanding that Krishna is not interested in the mundane bodies, either of men dressing as women or even of that of mundane women. The most beautiful woman in the world, they have this Miss World contest. Krishna's not interested in Miss World. Krishna's not attracted to Miss World. He's attracted to Radha, to the gopis. Even these Miss World is just a joke compared to the apsaras of the heavenly planets. But Krishna's not attracted to them either. When Nara Narayana performing austerities, and Indra thinks that they're just some mundane people who wanted to become Indra, and Indra sends some apsaras to attract them, and Narayana looks at them and says, nice pretty girl. You like pretty girls? Here. He creates some more pretty than the ones that Indra sent. Here's some more. You like pretty girls? Here's some more. Here's some more beautiful than yours. You take them. He's not attracted to mundane women. So it may seem that some people are very much absorbed in Krishna, even absorbed in chanting the holy name. But what is this Siddhanta? What is the proper understanding? What is bhakti? Another definition of bhakti is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti pareshanu bhavo viraktir anyatra. Bhakti means the experience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word used is paresh, the Supreme Controller. That means we have to serve him. And that is demonstrated by detachment from everything else. So, I've seen in Bangladesh a guru with a couple of sevikas, or female servants, and people think it's very spiritual. But fortunately, because we are trained by Prabhupada, we rejected this. And in some village, and all the local people thought we were great offenders, because how can you say he's our guru and this? But we rejected this person is bogus. He can't. He doesn't. You don't have some female servants. This is rascaldom. Sevika means not just cooking, but all forms. So the idea that the guru is the enjoyer of the disciple. Everything should be offered to the guru. That's stated by Krishna himself. But the guru accepts that because he's a servant of Krishna and offers the service of the disciple. First of all, he trains the disciple to serve Krishna and not to serve himself. And he accepts service to direct that to Krishna. But the idea that the serve the guru and the guru becomes satisfied on the mundane level, this has been the downfall of Vedic culture. So all these points have to be understood very carefully. Otherwise, within the Vaishnava Sampradaya, there'll be admixtures of Mayavad, Sahajyaism, and all kinds of deviations. So hearing is essential. So the mind should be pure. Yeah, one may be very attached to Krishna. People may appear to be attached, but they're attached on some mundane sensual platform. The senses are not actually purified. So they may appear to be attached, but Krishna doesn't accept their service. That's again, if someone may say, well, he's a great devotee. And just like we see, there are so many examples. Chaitanya Charitamrita. There was a great devotee of Rama, apparently, who was always chanting Ram Nama, and but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected. Well, he didn't totally reject, because that person had served Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't accept him as a great devotee and didn't give him any special mercy, even though he'd served Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. He was always chanting Ram Nam. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected him, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood that in his heart this apparent Ram Bhakta is a Mayavadi. He doesn't accept the principle of ultimate and utter surrender to Rama. So, yeah, all these points should be clearly understood. Otherwise, our bhakti, it won't flow properly. Like that, when I made this point that you don't keep the picture of the guru bigger than the picture of his guru. And then the question came, well, we do it out of love for our guru. It may be love, but we have to learn how to love also. What is the proper way to love? Just like in traditional culture, the woman, she'll never be praised in the presence of her husband. Or she'll never accept to be exalted more than her husband, because she takes the position of the servant of her husband. So even a Vaishnava is most exalted, he won't accept to be praised more than his own guru, and in fact any praise that's offered to him, he will say that it's jogat bichare kichu nahi pai tomara koronasha. It's whatever I have, it's only by the mercy of my own guru. He won't accept to be exalted more. So you may think that's love for your guru, but if he's not pleased, then that's not love. Means we should also know how to please the person. It's just that, yeah, we may offer Krishna some Swiss cheese or Swiss chocolates, but we don't find that's on the menu of Mother Yashoda. So we may like to eat that, but if we love Krishna, we have to offer what he likes to eat. We should know, if we actually love someone, we should know what pleases them and act accordingly. Not that, well, I think he should like this, and therefore he should damn well like it. That's not love. So there's no major offense in this for those who are not informed, but that's why we need to be informed also. We need to take education. I'm a little concerned, actually, that in our movement nowadays we have Bhakti Shastri courses, which is very good, they should be there. But I'm concerned that with the idea that education is confined to the Bhakti Shastri course, and then everything else you do is just, you know, it's just all bliss or whatever. But education is an ongoing function. and Srila Prabhupada, we find that he was always educated. He was always always teaching his disciples, formally and informally. So we shouldn't think, oh, okay, I did my Bhakti Shastri course, that's it. And the guru is just someone who smiles at you and you smile back. And he gives ashirvadam, blessings, and that's all there is to it. But he's a teacher, supposed to be. So, and teaches us and guides us so that in a manner that we can actually serve Krishna. Otherwise, we have no access to Krishna, because Krishna cannot be perceived by the mundane senses, and our senses are on the mundane platform. So how are we going to have access to Krishna? We have to be, our senses have to be retrained. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? No question. Everything is understood? Nothing is understood? Could be either. Time for prasada? It could be another reason. Actually, these points are all very simple. But sometimes we become overly complex, and then we miss the simple points. Or we think that because it's simple, we don't need to hear it anymore. But if we make some basic mistake, we can even become expert in very high things, but if we make some basic mistakes, then we're all... Just like I was doing mathematics at school, but... Somehow or other, my basic arithmetic, I always used to make mistakes, and so have all these complex calculus and all this kind of thing, and I understood all the theory, but I could never work it out I'd always make at the end, it'd be obvious there's some mistake in the calculus, and then I have to go back through the whole thing and find that I'm making some basic arithmetical error. So in the same way, we can, you know, discuss very high topics and this and that, but if we don't have the basic things in order, then we're going to make some basic mistakes, and then we're going to end up with an error.